We were lucky enough to have a first product that has been in market now for almost 5 years that people loved and wanted to use and still want to use to this day. Believing in yourself, of course, staying humble and open to input and feedback. But, you know, nothing gets done unless you sort of act with conviction, right? You could just keep overthinking stuff. And the best thing to test whether you have a good idea or not is to actually go and do it.
Welcome to the Effortless Swimming Podcast, the show that helps swimmers and triathletes love the water, become a better swimmer, and live a better life. Here's your host, Brenton Ford.
Dan Eisenhart is the CEO and founder of Form Swim. As a distance swimmer, one of Dan's biggest challenges was knowing his times and his pace when he was training. So in 2006, he had the idea of creating a pair of goggles that could show your splits while you were swimming. But it wasn't until 2018 that he had the right team, the experience and the technology that allowed him to create the world's first augmented reality swim goggles. This is when Form was born. On this episode, we dive into how you can get more out of your sessions by using real-time data. What features does Dan use the most in his own swimming? What was the hardest feature to develop in the goggles with the new swim straight feature, with the heart rate monitor? Or if you've ever wanted to tread your own path in your professional life, what's the best way to get started? And what three things would you need to consider if you're going to go out on your own in business? All that and more in today's episode. Now, if you're not following our Instagram page yet, head over to Instagram at Effortless Swimming. We're currently doing a giveaway for a pair of Gen 2 Form Smart Swim goggles. That ends on the 30th of April, so Tuesday, 12 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. So head to our Instagram page to win yourself a pair of Form Smart Swim goggles, the Gen 2 version. Welcome to this week's episode of the Effortless Swimming Podcast. My guest today is the founder and CEO of Form Swim, Dan Eisenhart. Welcome to the podcast, Dan.
Thanks a lot, Bren. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Dan, take me back to when you first had the idea of having some sort of augmented reality for swimming where you could see the data in front of you. When was that first idea born?
Yeah, the light bulb moment was really doing my MBA, which was in 2006, and I was doing an exchange program. I was actually living in Melbourne at that time, and then I did an exchange program to Vancouver, Canada, and I picked an entrepreneurship course, and I was asked, we were all asked to come up with an idea and pitch it to class, and we had to be passionate about the idea. And I was like, God, I was a lifelong swimmer, come from a family of swimmers and engineers, and I thought, okay, well, what's the biggest pain point in my life as a swimmer? Where it was really to have real-time access to metrics, because I was a 400-500 meter swimmer. So I would only get updates, you know, when you're resting at the pool and you can't really see the pool clock and you have to do all this mental math. So I pitched this in class and some people came over, they became my co-founders, and we thought we were going to create this company in 2006. It was too early, we couldn't pull it off, and we ended up pivoting, so to speak, to ski goggles. So we ended up creating Recon, which became basically a company that does the same thing as Form, but back then it was for skiing and later on cycling. And so that's kind of how the whole thing started.
And you say it was too early. Was it too early for the technology, too early for you with your business acumen? Like, what was too early about it?
It seemed too hard at the time to get into such a small form factor inside a pair of swimming goggles that were sold for $20, to get the price point down, to get the form factor down and make it waterproof. And then, you know, tackle this opportunity in a market like swimming. It was just, we thought it was too hard. And we ended up pivoting to skiing because ski goggles were $200, $250. Lift tickets were $100 a day. So we thought, okay, maybe it's a better idea to stop there. So yeah, it was a bunch of challenges, and many of them are technical challenges.
When I look back at the clinics that we do, so we started pretty early out using GoPros and iPads for analysis at clinics. But in the early days, we had GoPro Hero 3s, and it took 15 minutes to download one video to the iPad to then be able to look at it. And even with the software, it was very cumbersome to be able to analyze it, record it, and then to send it to people. I used to employ someone for 1 to 2 days a week just to export all of the footage and the analysis that we do at clinics to then be able to send it out. And now it's just very simple with the right apps and technology. So now it's possible to run them the way that we do, but before that we couldn't. So in terms of the goggles, has the technology evolved quite rapidly in the last couple of years to allow you to do some of the things that the goggles are capable of doing, or has it always been there and it's just now that you're figuring out how to use it?
Yeah, I think, I mean, the biggest challenge for us to overcome was really making these waveguides, which is how we show the information underwater. So you can just like have these numbers and information float in front of you. To have those work underwater, that was a very difficult thing to do, because it's not the same when you put a waveguide into water. Everything gets distorted. It's kind of like the raindrop on your iPhone, you know, in the rain, you're trying to read an email. And so that was a big challenge for us to solve. So I think that just required the right team to look at this and have the right vision and work towards it. So that could have been done earlier. I think the machine learning that was required to enable the really accurate tracking that we have, which is the foundation for the entire product. Without accurate tracking of your splits and so forth, it doesn't really matter. You can't build experiences on top of that. So that those things, I think, for machine learning to really sort of enter the stage, that didn't happen until sort of the mid-2010s, and you had enough people that knew how to do this, at least at scale, and for consumer products. So I think it all sort of came together around 2015 was sort of when, that was also when I got the team together and we originally started looking at this. That's where I think the form factors, the price points for the components and the expertise sort of all came together to enable this category to finally take off.
Was there a moment where you tested a prototype of the goggles, like a working prototype where it was giving you your splits coming off the walls, it was giving you your times and that sort of thing? Was there a moment there where you had it working and you're using them and you went, oh, yes, like this is what I've wanted for so many years?
Yes, I remember almost the day. It was 2018, because I was a guinea pig, you know, going to the pool, not every day, then at least many times a week to swim with the latest firmware. And it took a while to train those machine learning algorithms to deliver a reliable, accurate output. And it's just a constant iteration in the pool. And I really wanted to work seamlessly so that it could detect automatically when I was resting, when I was starting. There's not a big lag. I couldn't have like sort of force it to create errors. And that took, you know, a long time to do. But yes, the first time I jumped in the pool, first off, you know, I was like, it's hard to get used to a new pair of goggles, right? If you swam with the same, I was a Swedish goggles, you know, the ones without, you know, very minimalistic. Yep. Right. And so I never changed goggles, and just to change goggles, right? It's a big thing. But as I saw the display there, I was like, okay, it doesn't matter. I can get used to these goggles pretty quickly. And it took me a day or two, and then I was used to them because the benefits were so huge.
Is there anything that like looking back, like at the time you thought, man, this is such a challenge. This is so hard. I cannot figure out how we can get this certain thing to work. And you look back and go, well, now it seems kind of simple and basic, but at the time was a real challenge.
Yeah. Well, I guess it was a real challenge to make the heart rate work in our newest goggle, Smart Swim 2. So that's pretty recent. And it's actually the opposite thing. Yeah, at the time, we thought it was easy to pull off heart rate. How hard could it be? We just, you know, launched the product and we could provide, you know, see-through information on the water. But it turned out it's actually very complicated to deliver a sort of low latency heart rate sensing on the water. And so that's something that we sort of learned through those many years of swimming with the heart rate sensor and going back to the lab and tweaking the algorithms so that the heart rate sensor could fit multiple different face shapes and skin tones and not have too much of a lag, because swimming is an interval sport, so you have to be able to immediately see your heart rate as you change your effort level. And that was a big challenge. So that was sort of the opposite. I mean, I think most things that we did in the early days there with, you know, making just the basics work, when you look back, you're like, okay, maybe we could have done that faster with current knowledge and the current team. But back then, we're going from zero to one, so to speak, is actually really, really hard, because you don't have any frame of reference. You don't have really the resources yet. You know, everything is, maybe there's four or five people. So trying to do a lot with few people is always very difficult. And that's much easier later on when you're a full team. It's like, oh, we could have done this in 2 months. But those are two different contexts.
I always say it's hard to steer a parked car. And when you haven't got that initial, you know, product there, you don't have any momentum behind you. It's really hard work and a lot of effort to get things going. But then as it starts rolling, you build that momentum and it snowballs, and then you can just start to change things a lot quicker, can't you? And
yeah,
I mean, with the heart rate, it was an issue with like having it to be able to read the heart rate well for all facial shapes, as well as just being able to give that data quick enough, or like what was that the issue, the connection with the...
Yeah, no, it's good. The biggest issue was actually that in a control setting, because in the lab, go to pool, we got like five people in the pool, and we told them exactly what to do, and we could put the heart rate, you know, the goggles on them with the right strap tension and placement and the swim cap over the strap and all that stuff. Worked perfectly, right? And then what you realize when you release it into the field and you have people that haven't gotten that kind of in-person guidance, then... Mm. And you may not be able to like perfectly position the sensor or the goggles so that, you know, you're reading from the ophthalmic arteries here, which is running from your eyeballs here back up the side of the temples. So really it was then making it more forgiving, the technology, so that you could afford to not be perfect in the placement and position and strap tension and still get a reliable signal. So that's something that takes a long time, because you'll never get perfect. You'll just get better and better and better. So I think that was just acknowledging that when you're wearable, you're on the face, people's face shapes and skin tones are very different. And so it's very difficult to get all of them in one go. And then, so you have to, you have to really constantly tweak both, you know, software, but also some of the hardware aspects to get, you know, just the right tension and the contact surface with the skin to get the best signal.
Well, using the goggles for the first time and then using a new version of the goggles for the first time with the heart rate, it's so amazing to have that data right there in front of you. And I look back to when I was squad training as a teenager, we'd count 10 seconds on the clock, count our beats per minute, which seems archaic now. But yeah, it still works, but it just seems very archaic now compared to what we've got there. And it's another world. And the fact that you can actually get your splits in each 25 or 50 is something that, as a kid, I was like, wouldn't that be awesome to know what my time is? We only got it when the coach yelled it out or when we looked up at the stop clock, but now it's just right there in front of us, which is such a cool thing. And to think it's only been around, you know, a couple of years, it's like kids these days won't even sort of know how we used to do it, right? I'm talking like an old man, but like you just don't know what it was like for us back in the day.
Yeah, if you think about it, it's so funny, right? Because swimming has been completely underserved by technology. I mean, look at running and cycling with GPS and bike computers and sensors and all this stuff. And so that didn't happen in swimming. You know, it's all still just paddles and pull buoys. And then, of course, you've got the smartwatches that were really designed for running. And then, oh, by the way, you can also use them in the pool. And by the way, you can't see any of that while you're swimming. So it was always frustrating for me, because I had this, I really always felt that this was possible. And the fact that nobody really seemed to be bothered with it. And then once you give it to them, to swimmers, and they never go back. It's just essential. I mean, our customers are it's a very sticky piece of equipment, right? Whether you swim once a week or twice a day, it just becomes something that's very hard to live without when you've been, you know, when you suddenly can just offload like all that mental math, and plus you can get much higher resolution on what you're doing and then try and focus on your weaknesses and how to improve them.
How much of what you learned in your previous business at Recon were you able to take into form?
A tremendous amount. I don't think that we could have pulled this off, because I was fortunate enough to have a bunch of people, ex-colleagues there from Recon come over. So a lot of that knowledge transferred over, not just my own. And I would say just all the learning / mistakes that we made to those, you know, what, 8 years at Recon really helped us hit the ground running, because it's a different tech stack. We use different optics and everything is different. We don't have GPS and all this stuff, but the learnings of how you consume this, you know, live information and how to focus your roadmap and how to put together that very multidisciplinary team that you need in place, because you're on the face which is the most valued piece of real estate. So you're really, you're sort of a piece of like a fashion item, and you're also a technology device. And to merge those worlds, it means you've got to have a really broad range of skills in your team. So those were huge learnings that we couldn't have been without.
When I look at people who start businesses or perhaps maybe new careers and that kind of thing, quite often if I look at their history and the people that do well, they're often taking things that they've got experience in or interest in. For you, swimming, you've got that sort of business technology background, obviously eyewear with Recon. They're able to take these areas of experience, match them together, and just sort of do something slightly different. It's not like you're taking this blank slate and you're going into, I don't know, something completely different. You're opening a bakery or something. It's like you take your areas of interest and you're able to do something that's different. And when I look back at my coaching, I was a swimmer. I really liked the business side of things. I was quite early with YouTube and the social media stuff and really enjoyed doing that. And so I was able to build Effortless Swimming with what I was interested in and what I had got a lot of experience in now, looking back sort of 20 years with that. So it's just making these slight adjustments to things you've got experience in. So maybe at like teenager or early 20s, what did you picture your life looking like now that you're in your late 40s?
Yeah, it's funny. I don't really come from a family of entrepreneurs. I mean, my family and most of my engineers and working for big companies. And it always fascinated me. I was always fascinated by people who went off on their own but it wasn't something that was expected of me. And I think I ended up doing consulting after I did engineering and then worked for PwC and IBM implementing SAP ERP systems, which I eventually found extremely boring. It was a good learning experience to go out to these big companies and learn how to optimize their processes and then so forth. And it probably gave me some good tools. But it wasn't really until I did my MBA, I got my eyes up for other things. And I think just starting a business and going through all the different exercises that you have to go through before you've validated an idea and then be able to create the financial model and the strategy and put all that together. Those were the tools I didn't have. And that opened my eyes. And then, of course, serendipity, and you're in the right place at the right time and meet the right people, right? You can really... always bet on that. But I think to answer your question is that I didn't really know what I wanted to do, to be honest. When I was, for example, in my 20s, I kind of ended up saying, okay, I can always do engineering. I thought that was exciting, but it wasn't my calling. So it was really just kind of following my passion for traveling. I ended up in Australia and then ended up going to Vancouver. It was really more trying to keep an open mind to meeting people and having experiences, I think was what ultimately drove me into this, entrepreneurship role.
Yeah, fantastic. And in terms of where you're at now with the business, Form Goggles, I feel like it's a term that's used. It's like Kleenex for tissues. It's like people associate Form. It's like, well, that's swim goggles. Like that's the main brand there. Why do you think that is? Is it, I don't know, were you first to market? Like, is that from memory you are, but like, maybe I'm wrong there. Like, I saw an additional thing that you could add. This is a long time ago, but didn't get much traction. So yeah, were you first to market?
We were definitely first to market. And we were also, we have the IP that protects this underwater see-through information. I realized after Recon, which wasn't see-through, it was more a little monitor at the bottom of the goggles. So you had to change focus to consume the information. And then through those years at Recon, I realized we really do need see-through information so that you don't have to change your focus or glance. And in order to be able to get more, rich information, metrics are fine, but I always saw as having, guided workouts and coaching as well, then you need to be see-through, right? So you don't have to extend any effort to get the information. So that was we were first there, and we now have the IP to protect that space. And in terms of Form, that name of course came up with, you know, through some great discussions with my co-founders, and we couldn't believe that it wasn't trademarked for our category. And we ended up looking in Canada. Oh, it's not. And then US, and we got the whole, you know, most of the world trademarked with that brand name. So it's a very memorable thing as well. If you talk about Kleenex, you know, or Xerox or whatever. So people who love our products, you know, and they talk about them, this name seems to stick as well.
Yeah. It's a great one. Four letters, you know, one syllable rolls off the tongue. It's a really good one. And in terms of competition, how do you see your competition? Do you look much at what they're doing? Do you think much about them? Or are you a person who likes to stay in their own lane and just do what you think is going to be best?
Well, I always want to learn from competitors. And I think competition is always healthy, right? So for us, there are alternatives, right, where you don't have see-through information, apart from some, you know, unnamed Chinese companies that, you know, would always come in and try and copy what you're doing. But apart from those, I always like to learn from competition or alternatives and see, well, could we do it better, have done it better, and be inspired? So I don't actually spend much time being threatened at all, because I am very focused on what we can do and our experience. And I have confidence in our team and our ability to create amazing products and experiences. And you can do that in several ways. And we've analyzed our customers and our market, and we know what they want and who they are. So we just continue, we just execute. So that's, I think if we were in a space that we spend a lot of money, of course, getting to this point, if we didn't have the IP as well, and what I think is the difference maker, which is that the see-through underwater display, then I would probably look a little bit more over my shoulders, because then suddenly it's an open playing field. But it is very difficult to enter this market with what we've built as the first mover, which is not an automatic. Like in a lot of markets, the first mover doesn't make it. And it can be very difficult to be first mover, because you get one shot. And then if you can do it in one shot, and then you end up getting, you know, crowded. So we were lucky enough to have a first product that has been in market now for almost 5 years that people loved and wanted to use and still want to use to this day. So that's always great.
Yeah. I find myself like a similar sort of thing. It's like I'll see what other, whether it's podcasts or, you know, swim coaches are doing, and I'll certainly learn from them and take a lot from them. But I find if I focus too much on it, I feel disempowered. It's like, you know, for whatever reason, you know, like I can't impact what they're doing. It's like, I try and just stay in my lane, switch everything else off and just do what I think is going to work best and do it my way as well. Because one thing I've learned is that whenever I've tried to do something, or for me, it's, you know, it's more coaching, right? Like coaching or delivering something in a way that someone else is doing it, it falls flat. But if I just go, you know, put my style on things and theme on things, and that tends to work out pretty well, and it comes across as more genuine, and I enjoy doing it more. And even if it's a little bit different than the norm, to me, those things have actually gone really well. And an example of that, we've got this 5-day catch challenge. It's like a 5-day course that a lot of people have been through and had good success with. Like it's something that I just sort of thought this would work really well, and this is something I want to teach people. And so I put it together. It didn't take me too long, but it's like, this is something that's just been in my mind for a long time. So I put it out there, and the results have been, you know, terrific. And so many people have been through it, and so many people have come up and said, oh, I did this and, you know, got a lot out of it. So what I learned from that is that if you just sort of follow what's been in your mind and you've been thinking, like, just go with that, you know, just trust your gut instinct. There's a lot to be said for going with your gut.
I could not agree more. And I think it also comes back, I mean, from a sports background, you couldn't control what your competitors were doing or how they were training or how they were eating or what gifts they had, you know, genetically or whatever. You know, you can only focus on what you can control, and then try and be inspired by something that you think, you know, is this training method that you can also adopt, right? Maybe tweak it. But yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think, you know, going for it, believing in yourself, of course, staying humble and open to input and feedback, but, you know, nothing gets done unless you sort of act with conviction, right? You just keep overthinking stuff, and the best thing to test whether you have a good idea or not is to actually go and do it, and then just start humble, you know, low ambitions, and then you can actually always add onto it with customer feedback, right? And when it comes to products, of course, some products are hard to get to that minimal viable product level, right? Like our product took years and years to develop, but we didn't go out and launch a product that had all the features that we have today, right? Even though back then we had envisioned most of them. Because we knew, okay, let's start with something that we know is easy to communicate and measure and message around. And then we can go from there based on customer feedback.
Yeah, start simple. And I mean, it goes with improving your swimming as well. It's like, just keep things simple. Just start, pick one thing, pick maybe two things, and just start working on those. As soon as you try and do it too much, you're just going to get overwhelmed. And so when you start with a product, you don't want to have all the features where people just go, well, this is so great, but then they just get lost in all the different things. You want to start with the most fundamental things that someone's going to want. Yeah. What features do you look at when you're swimming and using the goggles? Is there a certain thing that you like get most out of? And for me, it's really just the splits. Like, I just love seeing my splits. Yeah. And being able to adjust effort for that, you know, it's just, especially for those longer sets where I'm maybe progressing in speed. And, you know, to me, that's like just such a fundamental thing, and it makes a huge difference for those sessions.
Yeah. No, the same for me, coming from the competitive swimming background. The splits are just, it's just a foundation for a workout. And then I think now I'd say my favorite is actually the guided workouts, because I can now, instead of having to memorize these workouts, I have my, you know, soggy piece of paper or whatever on the pool deck. It's just like served up right in front of me, and it keeps me accountable, and I motivated by just like, okay, the goggles will tell me what to do. And, you know, I don't have a coach on deck anymore. So it's a really, that actually even surprised me that I would get so hooked on swimming with guided workouts. I think for open water, I mean, and one thing as well for head coach, when we launched that, one feature that I find using a lot is the head pitch feature, because it turns out that, I don't know if it's old school coaching, but my head pitch, like, I sort of look up a bit too much at higher speeds, and that's not that efficient, because then your legs drag a little bit and so forth. So that was something I didn't know I was doing until I got the head pitch actual angle in my goggles, and the goggles were telling me, you're average at best on this. So that's one thing that I'm obsessing about at the moment. For open water, like, swim straight is just magic. I have to say, it's just having that digital compass. And, you know, if you're doing triathlons, you know, it's just not having to constantly swim with your head above water. Of course, you're sighting for safety, but just knowing that you can swim in a straight line, it's just takes so much anxiety out of open water swimming. And knowing you're saving, you know, on, let's say, an Ironman swim distance, you're probably saving 200 to 300 meters just in not zigzagging. And that's, you know, that's hard to win back if you were to train that much more to get that back in speed, right? So that's kind of a gift for you.
That's what Scott from your team was saying. He said, we've had so many people use that feature now in races and just, like, you know, write in or message on Instagram and just be like, wow, I can't believe how well I swam, like how straight I swam for these races. So it's pretty cool to get that feedback.
And we can see that, right? Because we can see in the app that, you know, people that may, that you know, are beta testers and are even friends of form that would be zigzagging. They go out and swim the exact same route, you know, every week or every day in open water, and it's kind of all over the place. And then after swim straight, it's just like straight out and back. And just graphically, we already know that it's making an impact. Like, we are making our swimmers faster in open water. So that's a great feeling to have with such a, you know, relatively simple feature, but hard to make accurate because of the noises from your head, from breathing and calibration. So it's quite difficult actually to get accurate. So that took some time, but the team pulled through.
I did a session, an open water session this morning with a bunch of people here in Torquay where I live. And we're out in the open water and we were probably 150 meters out. And we're facing the shore. And I said, because I was just teaching them open water skills, and a lot of them are fairly new swimmers. And we do this exercise where we close our eyes, we do 50 strokes, and we try and swim towards the shore, towards a marker. And then we open our eyes after 50 strokes and we just see where we're at. And we had people going, you know, across each other, swimming over the top of each other, finishing, you know, a good sort of 30 meters way off to the side. So naturally people just tend to veer to one side. It's just how we swim, and if you're breathing to one side, often we tend to veer. So being able to go straight can just save people so much time.
Well, I'll tell you, my Ironman in Kona in 19, that happened to me. And I mean, I was used to the black line in the bottom of the pool back in my competitive swim days. But I always thought I was actually good at swimming straight. It turned out I was horrible because I was picked up by the paddleboarders twice on the way out and the way back. I had no idea that I was constantly veering right. And so I don't know how much I lost on that 4 kilometer swim, just in terms of swimming too much, right? But it's a good example. It doesn't really matter if you're a really experienced swimmer. You know, it's just like open water is a whole different game. And very few people can just swim straight without any aid. Like, it's very difficult.
Yeah, I mean, if I switch off 20 or 30 strokes in an open water race, I will be off to the side. I will have veered off to the, usually to the left. Yeah. And it's just what it is. So you've got to pay attention. You've always got to keep in mind. And it's not an experience. It's not how good you are or how experienced you are. It's just what happens. So we've got to be aware of it and then we've got to adjust it. But a lot of people who, when these new goggles came out, they saw the YouTube review I did on them, and they, like nearly everyone, they are most interested in the swim straight feature and also the heart rate as well. But that's quite a, it's just a very unique thing. And I remember there was something probably, I don't know, I'm guessing 6 years ago I saw where it was something that, you know, maybe you add to your goggles, and this company was like just something that you could add to your goggles for an open water swim to help you with the direction, or maybe it beeped or something. I can't quite remember, but it never really got off the ground. Do you remember that at all?
Was it On Course? The LED based?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
It's hard to do. It's very hard to do. It's always tough with retrofitters. Well, I can't remember if they were retrofit or whether it was came with the goggles. But it's hard to pull off, right? You need to spend a lot of time in development and testing, right? And that feedback loop. So it's quite resource heavy. But is well worth it, I think. And now that we're race approved officially, you know, this is something I am confident we'll see out there and in the triathlons around the world, that it just doesn't make sense to not use it in a race. If you've spent a year training for an event, somebody didn't train as much as you and they're faster than you just because they decided to get the foam goggles with the swim straight feature, right? So it just seems like if you're a serious triathlete or open water swimmer, you know, of course you'd want to get like, the be guided between the buoys, right? That it doesn't. So I think we'll see that. And certainly I've had a lot of questions from triathletes asking that question. So can I really use that in my competition that's coming up, my whatever it is, half distance or full distance? And I'm like, yeah, you can. And I refer them to our website and they can see the proof right there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see, like people are already starting to use it, obviously. So it's only going to get more common, I think.
Yeah.
In terms of looking forward to the next couple of years, what are the challenges that you face? What are you most looking forward to? What excites you about where the business is going? What you can contribute to swimming and triathlon? What really motivates you looking forward to the next couple of years?
Yeah, I'm really excited about our premium offering because we spent, you know, the last several years putting value into that and a lot of resources behind building on top of the activity tracking. And that was what we launched the goggles with, and that comes with the goggles. But we were seeing a lot of our customers really get excited about the premium offering. And once they start using these premium features, they stay in, right? And then initially, of course, there's always the pushback. Why should I, you know, pay extra when I just bought the goggles? And but I think that's it's always going to be people for whom this is not a fit for that, for paying for those features. But there's so many resources that form go into that experience and are those experiences that are building on top of activity tracking. And so we'll continue to invest in that. And head coach, you know, a good example is the swim straight feature we just talked about for open water, our workouts and additional features that will just help with the execution of a workout to guide you through it and also help making you a faster swimmer, a better swimmer through coaching. And holding you accountable and giving you metrics so you can objectively see, okay, my distance per stroke or my form score just went up. Well, this is why, or this is why not. What's my top priority? Keeping you honest. So continuing down that path. And I think there's some education as well, I think, with our customers to show them, well, this is actually what you can get out of that offering. So that's what I'm excited about. We've just sort of started, I think, that part of our journey and it can keep going, right? We can keep building on top of the features that we have today through listening to our customers and finding out, okay, well, what's the next sort of swim straight feature, for example, that could completely revolutionize part of the sport. So that's what I'm excited about, just launching firsts all the time and seeing our customers use our product and enjoying our experiences out in the real world.
Well, because you can use the goggles, like you can use the general features of the goggles without have the premium subscription, right? Like, so you can still, it's not like the goggles aren't going to, they're not going to stop working if you, if you're not paying the subscription. So, and when I think of it from a business point of view, like there's, if you want to continue to develop the goggles, you want to, you keep improving on them and having the support, like you need to have that sort of subscription background and to be able to help progress the goggles and keep delivering for customers. So it's, the main thing is you can still use the goggles without the subscription. So that's why you see all these new features, because you to support it and to keep having that good experience, you need to be able to fund it.
Yeah, no, and we've got a flexible model, right? So if you only want to use the premium features for a couple of months, then you can just use it for a couple of months, pay for those months, and then stop. What we see is most people that end up starting on premium, they stay on premium. But we did launch this new plan where we're just charging less than $9 a month, right? If you lock in for a year. And for that, you get all these tools and all these workouts. So it's a really good offering. And I think, thinking about this with coaches, we're really working with coaches. This is not in lieu of a coach. This actually makes it way better, because your coach can focus on all the things that are important for you to improve your technique and get better. And all the information, there's just more nuanced information to analyze. And then when the coach isn't there, then you can hold the swimmer accountable. And that's going to go in the app and the coach can see that afterwards. So I think it's something we're not realizing, that it's really sort of bringing the coach closer to the swimmer and also holding the swimmer accountable. And that sort of empowering, I think that empowerment has not existed in the sport of swimming up until now. It's always been, you always sort of had to rely on the moments when your coach had the bandwidth to really give you that feedback or give you the stopwatch time splits, right? Now that's changed.
Yeah, absolutely. And with that accountability, like with knowing what your splits are, it surprises me how many people, especially if they're in a squad, they'll be going through hundreds or 200s. Maybe they're pushing off on feet and they're just sort of, touch and go, and they're just doing the session, but they don't know what their paces are. They don't know their splits.
Yeah.
It's like you really need to want to have that idea of what pace you're swimming, so you can actually adjust your effort, make sure you're getting faster if you need to get faster and those sorts of things. So this is a good way to do it in the moment. Get that feedback and adjust accordingly, rather than maybe just looking back at like you get your Garmin data at the end of the session, go, oh, cool, I was swimming at 1:45 pace. It's like, no, you really should be knowing what your pace is throughout a session if you want to be improving on things.
Yeah, and even in a team environment, you remember, the first person who starts in the lane, they'll get accurate times from the coach, when they're doing the stopwatch. Then with 2, 3, 4, and so forth. Well, most of them aren't starting 5 or 10 seconds after the previous swimmer. So they'll get times that are, faster than what they actually did. So I think now that's not, our goggles, they just start automatically when you push off, right? And when you hit the wall again, they stop. So you get much more accurate accounting of your splits in a set. So even for a team environment, this is something that's gold for a coach, right? Because every single swimmer, what they swam, what their times were, and it doesn't matter when they started.
Yeah, exactly right. And to wrap it up here, Dan, so just sort of off the swimming topic a little bit, but more just in terms of business and pursuing your own path. I know a lot of people who listen to this do run their own business or sort of do their own thing, or they're looking to do something different. So what advice would you have for someone who is maybe looking to pursue something that they've been thinking about for a while, maybe something that lines up more with the things that they're interested in? Are there any sort of key lessons that come to mind when you think about that?
Yeah. I always say there's sort of always three things that matter. So the first is the customer, second is the product, and the third is the product market fit, a product customer fit, right? So you're always going to be negotiating between the customer and your product, what's possible, and then what's really important for the customer, not just like nice to have, because you can't do it all. And then, okay, can we do that in the product? And then thinking through that from a roadmap perspective. It doesn't have to be a physical product, it can be a service, it can be anything. It's the same thing. You know your customer, know that how your product differentiates and delivers those essential things that customers are asking for. And then product market fit is many things, right? It's, of course, the features, but it's the price you're charging for the features as well, and the customer service and support that you're providing, and the warranties and your brand promise, and all those things go into product market fit. And I think that's important. I've seen a lot of entrepreneurs maybe waste time in areas, you know, that do not pertain to these three areas. You know, they'll go to conferences and do all this stuff that has really very little value, right? Mm. Of course, there's some conferences that are valuable at the right time. But when you're just starting out, you have to be so focused on those three things. And initially, it's, you know, you can get over-focused on the product before understanding the customer. That's also bad. Of course, if you're just over-focused on the customer, not the product, that's also bad. So it's really looking at those things in tandem. And then I think another thing, if I look back to the last, 15, 16 years doing this, the focus that you need to have, and not, you know, you cannot get distracted. Once you understand the customer and the product and how they relate to each other, you cannot get distracted by shiny objects. And they come in many forms. They're going to be thrown at you. What if we could do this? And what if we could partner over there? Or all these great opportunities, but they don't matter until you've solved the fundamental problem of getting from 0 to 1. You don't have anything to sell. You don't have anything of value until you've solved the problem and tried it out with customers. So that's kind of my monologue what I've learned, at least from, you know, as a simple framework for, I think, any sort of maybe business, is to think along those lines.
Yeah, that, I think that's great. The way I heard a business sort of coach mention to me that, like number one, if you've got a good product, that in itself is like number one. A good product, you can have poor marketing, but an incredible product, as long as it's out there, people are going to refer other people, and it's going to start to spread. If it's a great book, if people are reading it, they're going to tell their friends. If it's you know, some swim technology, they're going to tell their friends. So like that it's got to be a good product or service, first of all, or else you're just going to be pushing uphill to try and continue with it. And then you've got to think about the customer, the person that you're serving, because, you know, I find a lot of people they're too caught up in thinking about what they would like. What would I like as the business owner? It's like, no, you've got to think about the person that you have in front of you. And for me, and I mean, similar for form, it's like, I have a lot of triathletes I work with. They're frustrated that they're finding the swim uncomfortable. It's hard work. They're fit, but they're just getting tired really quickly. And they just cannot get this swim thing figured out. So that's where I have sort of identified, okay, this is where I can really help. I can help teach them what they need to do to be able to make it enjoyable. It can be a lot of fun, and it can be easy. It can be something that isn't just this real slog, and you get to the end of the swim and you're exhausted, and then you've got to do the bike and the run. So it's like, just think about the person that you're serving and what's their like number one problem that you're trying to solve.
Yeah, amen. I could not agree more.
So Dan, thanks so much for jumping on the call. I know Form's been a sponsor of our podcast for several years, and I made a video a couple of years back. I don't know how, it's probably 3 years ago, and I got sent a pair of the goggles, and I was like, I'm a low tech swimmer. I don't wear a Garmin. I don't do anything like that, but I'll give these things a shot. And that's what I said in the email when, I can't remember who it was, reached out, but they said, look, well, I'd like you to try the goggles. And I was like, yeah, all right, this is a situation, but I'll try them and see how I go. Yeah. And I was sold. I was like, okay, this is pretty good. And so and I've worked with Form ever since. So thanks for sponsoring the podcast. This wasn't a paid podcast or anything. I just wanted to get you on to talk about the journey of Form. And for anyone who's maybe thinking about starting their own thing, I think this has been hopefully really helpful, but also just to see where it all originated from, where's it all come from, and where it's heading. So thank you so much for being on the podcast. I've really enjoyed talking to you as someone who's lived in Melbourne, as I have recently. So yeah, thanks so much, Dan. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Brendan, for having me. Thanks for your support of Form. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Effortless Swimming Podcast. If you'd like us to help you become a faster, more efficient swimmer, go to www.effortlessswimming.com.